Saturday, April 15th, a fundraiser for Girls Rock Camp Vancouver is taking place in the Grand Lux Hall of the Western Front, located at 303 East 8th Ave. Tickets are available at Zulu Records, Neptune Records, and both Red Cat Record locations. There will be raffle prizes from Anita Sikma, Nimbus School of Recording, Live Nation, John Fluvog, Tea Leather and Wood, The Juice Truck, Pizzeria Barbarella, CITR, and many more. Doors are at 6, show is at 6:30.
You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
I'm Marie Bernard, host of Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. Join me Mondays at noon as we explore the universal energy that connects us all. Let's discuss our journey of self-discovery, joy, presence, and living with authenticity. We can create positive change in the world, and it starts within each one of us. Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. Mondays at noon on CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
Hello and welcome to Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and your soul. I'm Marie Bernard. Welcome to the show. Thanks for being with us today. And of course, this is CITR 101.9 FM broadcasting live from unceded Musqueam territory on the University of British Columbia campus in beautiful Vancouver, BC. Or you might also be listening online at CITR.ca, CosmicDimensions.com, and PowerRadio.com on the Co-Creator Network. And you can also find my show on YouTube. That's YouTube.com/spiritual show. And today, you'll be listening to an old interview with Dr. Joe Dispenza. This interview was recorded a few years ago when he was coming to Vancouver to do some workshops here, a talk and an intensive workshop. And so I'll be playing that in a few minutes. But I just wanted to chat with you today, and I'm wondering how you're doing. So I'd love to hear from you. Feel free to email me, spiritualshow@gmail.com, or tweet me at Marie Bernard. And just let me know how you're doing today, how your weekend was, how you're coping with this rain and all that. I'm loving the beautiful cherry blossoms that are out. So I'm going to fully enjoy those while they last. And I was kind of thinking about it on the weekend while I was looking at the beautiful blossoms and feeling kind of disappointed that they only last for a little while. But then that's part of what makes them special, right? Is that whole impermanence thing, which I guess is part of what makes life special, is that there's an end date sooner or later. So yeah, I just want to know what you're thinking today. So feel free to email me, spiritualshow@gmail.com. And on the YouTube channel, I'm going to be doing some book reviews. I've already done a few, one on radical acceptance, which is an awesome practice. But I'm going to be doing regular book reviews. So if that's something that you're interested in, you can go and check out my YouTube channel, youtube.com/spiritualshow, and subscribe to the channel because I post interviews from this show and I also do vlogs. And like I said, I'll be doing book reviews on nonfiction books and psychology, things related to happiness. One of the books that I'm reading right now, I'm actually listening to an audio book that I got from the Vancouver Public Library, and it is called Persuasion by Robert Cialdini. And one of the things that they're talking about right now in the book is why some older people tend to be much more happy and satisfied with their lives as compared to younger people. And there's a few different reasons for that. One of them is that they just have these happy older people have just decided, you know what, life is too short to focus on all the worries and all the things that we could be stressed out about. So they choose to focus their attention on things that make them feel good, on happy memories, on happy people, things like that. One of the things that can hold back younger people from this is that we also still need to be focusing on our goals and building our careers and building our families and looking for the things that we want in our lives, whereas people who are retired have more time to focus on. They don't have to worry so much about all those other things that get stacked up in the to-do list. So it's a little bit of a balance, but there's a few things that they recommend. There's top three tips to focus on to create more happiness in our lives. The first one is every single day to focus on gratitude, to count our blessings, and then also to focus the energy on it in such a way that we're actually spending time on it. And the best way to do that is to write those things down. Another thing that I've heard is not only to write those things down, because it's easy to say, okay, I'm grateful for my bed and the sunshine and blah, 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 and just sort of list off a bunch of things that we should feel thankful for, but to actually take a moment to feel in our bodies, to feel that appreciation and that gratitude for those things. And the second one is to take time. I didn't write it down now. I'm like, the pressure is on. But to take time to really enmesh ourselves in that gratitude and to focus on positive experiences. So I'm going to be talking more about that on my YouTube page when I do the book review for this. So if you want to check that out, youtube.com/spiritualshow. And you can always find more information on my website, mariebenard.com. So I'm going to start this interview, and I hope that you enjoy it. Please let me know what you think, spiritualshow@gmail.com. So I want to send you lots and lots of love. Be well and have a fantastic week. Again, this is a repeat interview with Joe Dispenza, so I hope you enjoy it.
Sure. You know, I think a lot of people that saw What the Bleep Do We Know and spent a little time becoming familiar with my material, everybody wanted to really understand the how-to. I mean, everybody understands the philosophy, I think, at this point that, you know, our thoughts have something to do with our destiny. And so when I come to Vancouver, there'll be an evening 3-hour seminar, and then the following day will be a how-to workshop, the practical application on if I change my mind, if I truly change my mind, will there be some change or some evidence in my life? And according to the quantum law, you know, the quantum law says that the environment is an extension of our mind. So can we become scientists in our life then and take the time out of our busy day to begin to create? And if we do the creative process properly, then we get to be the receivers of those changes. And so it'll be about some, you know, practical tools that people can take home with them so that they can begin to work extensively in different areas of their life.
Wonderful. Well, thank you. So the main workshop that's going to be going on all day, 9 to 5, that is titled Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself. So what is it about ourselves that we need to break out of?
the psychological model tells us by the time we're 35 years old, we've pretty much memorized a set of automatic behaviors, automatic programs and emotional reactions that define us as a personality. And so people begin to realize after a certain point in their life that they have difficulty making changes because 95% of who we are is in a memorized set of subconscious programs. So we could say then that over time we become so familiar with ourselves that automatic thoughts go by unnoticed. You know, emotional reactions become part of our personality, and even memorized behaviors influence pretty much who we are. So every time we have a thought, we make a chemical. And if we have a great thought or an unlimited thought, we make chemicals in our brain that make us feel great or unlimited. If we have a negative thought or an unhappy thought, we make chemicals that make us feel negative or unhappy. And The moment we begin to make those chemicals signal the body for us to begin to feel exactly the way we were just thinking. Now, the moment we begin to feel the way we think, because the brain is in constant communication with the body, we begin to think the way we feel, which makes more chemicals for us to feel the way we think and think the way we feel. And it's this cycle, Marie, of thinking and feeling and thinking that conditions the body to memorize certain propensities and behaviors better than the conscious mind. And when we keep signaling the body the same way, the body becomes the mind, or the body knows better than the brain. And a great example is you can't consciously remember a phone number, but you pick up the receiver and your fingers dial the number. How does that happen? And you can't consciously, with your conscious memory, recall the seven-digit number, but the ten-digit number. But if you've practiced it so many times, it's your body that knows it better than your brain. And that's pretty much where our habits and our behaviors exist. And so a person can consciously want to change and consciously declare they want to be healthy, or they can consciously declare they want to be successful, or they consciously want to declare they've been in love. But they've conditioned their body to be unhappy, to be unhealthy, to be guilty, to be negative. And when mind and body are working in opposition, there'll never be change, especially when the body becomes the mind. So to change, then, is to think greater than how we feel, to think greater than the emotions in our body. And that takes a little bit of information and then some understanding on how it works.
So in this workshop, you're going to be teaching people how it works and then teaching some techniques?
Absolutely, absolutely. So the word meditation, for example, most people don't know that the word in Tibetan literally means to become familiar with, to make known, to know thyself. And so the process of change actually requires unlearning and relearning. It requires breaking the habit of the old self, because when the body becomes the mind, anytime the body knows better than the brain, or the body becomes the mind, that's called a habit. A habit is when the body is the mind. So we have to break the habit of the old self and reinvent the new self, or what we call in neuroscience pruning synaptic connections and sprouting new connections, or unmemorizing an emotion and then reconditioning the body to a new emotion or to a new mind. So the meditative process that we'll be teaching has everything to do with becoming familiar with those unconscious thoughts, those unconscious behaviors, and those unconscious feelings and emotions, and making them conscious, and so that when we make them more conscious, we have more control over them. And then to reinvent a new self, to really begin to think about a new way of being, a new way of thinking. And the science in the latest research in neuroscience shows that we can change the brain and the mind and the body to look like the event has happened ahead of the actual event, just by the meditative process. So if we can change the brain and body ahead of the actual physical experience, then that usually means that we put the hardware in place and we've conditioned the body to be prepared for the event ahead of the event. And that's, according to the quantum law, when the events start to find us. That's when those synchronicities begin to show up in our life that are the result of our own personal efforts.
So thank you for answering that, Dr. Joe. And so is this going to be regular meditation that we all know how to just kind of clear our mind, look at a candle, or is there going to be something different?
Well, absolutely
about
not.
This?
It won't be anything like that. There'll be 10 steps to the meditative process, and every single step will have a philosophical and scientific understanding so that you know what you're doing and why. And once you understand what you're doing and why you're doing it, you have intention behind it, and you understand that because you have a greater understanding that it has meaning. So it's a different meditation that requires both that unlearning and relearning process, and the steps will be explained pretty thoroughly, and people get handouts and they'll have an opportunity to practice it.
How long each day do you meditate for using this process?
Well, I typically wake up at 4:55 every morning. That's my time. And I allow for 2 hours every morning for myself, from 5 o'clock to 7 o'clock in the morning. That's my time. And the reason I allow that much time is because whenever we begin to work on ourselves, there's the door to the subconscious mind opens up twice. It opens up when you wake up in the morning. And when you wake up in the morning, your brain waves are changing from delta to theta to alpha to beta, and So there's a kind of a thin veil between the conscious mind and the subconscious. So it's really fertile ground to begin to set intentions and then surrender the outcomes to a greater mind. And so I usually allow 2 hours because when I wake up in the morning, there's a lot of things that I know that I have to do during the day. I have, you know, patients and staff and traveling and contracts and meetings and paperwork and thousands of things that most usually distract most people from the process of creation. And so I allow 2 hours because it usually takes me a little bit of time to get past myself and begin to think about what I really want to have happen in my future. Once I get beyond that, I get beyond those thoughts, I begin to ask myself this question, you know, what is the greatest ideal that I can be today? You know, what is the greatest person that I could be? And I allow myself to begin to let my brain work in different ways than it typically would work if I woke up and did the same thing and got out of bed the same way and brushed my teeth and drove to work and did the same thing that I always do. And so the neuroscientific definition of mind is the brain in action or the brain at work. So if you wake up and think the same thoughts and perform the same behaviors and you allow the environment to activate different circuits in your brain, pretty much you're thinking equal to the environment and the brain isn't working any differently, so you're never making a new mind. So the beauty behind the meditative process that we teach has everything to do with changing the mind before the experience, that you could actually make the brain work in different sequences and different patterns, different combinations, because you're thinking thoughts differently than you typically do. And because we can make thought more real than anything else, that's the privilege of being a human being, we can literally begin to make the thought become the experience. Now, if we do that properly, the end product of an experience is a feeling or an emotion. And if the thought becomes the experience in our own mind, the body begins to respond as if the experience is happening. Now, what's the beauty behind that? Well, the moment you begin to feel like that new ideal, or feel like that successful person, or feel like that person that's in love, or feel like that free person, the body is being conditioned by that emotion, and the body as the unconscious mind thinks it's in the event. It doesn't know the difference between the actual physical event that creates the emotion, or the emotion that you conjure up on your own. And so if we can get up as a new ideal of ourselves every day, then we're more prone to think and act in different ways. So I allow a couple hours every day.
I mean, maybe that's the ideal, but not everybody has either the time or the self-discipline to get up at 4:55 in the morning to meditate for 2 hours. If someone takes your workshop, do they have to plan for the rest of their lives to set aside 2 hours, or can they do it in short bursts? Or
sure. Well, I don't expect anybody to do that aside from me. And the process that they'll learn in the workshop doesn't take that long. The thing is that when you start drinking from the well, when you start making contact with that power within you, as you start beginning to make some important changes, it's not something that you have to do. It's actually become something that you actually enjoy doing, that you actually look forward to doing. It's not painful, or it's not hard. It's not like that at all. It becomes something where the body begins to relax and people begin to become more liberated, and they move out of that, you know, hardcore emotional state that has to do with those survival chemicals of stress that keep the body at a chemical balance. And so it doesn't have to be that long. And in the workshops that are taught, the process normally only takes about 30 minutes to 45 minutes. And so you can make it as long or as short as you want, as long as you actually get up as somebody else, you know, different than when you sat down. That's the key.
Great. Well, what about for people who have been, you know, a lot of us have seen What the Bleep Do We Know, a lot of us have seen the movie The Secret, and we do our best to think positively and follow the law of attraction or whatever it is that you want to call it, but there are a lot of people who aren't finding that they're getting the results that they want, not only in the physical manifestations, but just in their general habitual way of thinking. How long are you finding people are maybe reporting back to you that it takes when they do this meditation process, how long does it take for them to really start making changes in their personality and their mindset?
Well, you know, it's equal to the amount of knowledge that they learn, and so we've seen pretty dramatic results with people, you know, we've had people's, you know, tumors fall off their legs, and people that have had, you know, serious spinal injuries starting to move limbs again. We've had people with, you know, serious health problems get better. We've had people's lives change. And I think what most people don't understand is that, you know, when they start thinking about, like, the law of attraction, or they start thinking about creating their life or their reality, they just have a thought that's somewhat backwards. And so they think that when they accumulate those things, like when they accumulate their wealth or their success, or when they get their new house or the new car or whatever their dream is, that that's the time that they should be happy when it finally comes. And what most people don't understand is that they spend the majority of their time living by certain emotions that become part of their personality. Now, here's an example. When you have an emotional reaction to somebody or something, that emotional reaction has a chemical refractory period. And if we don't know how to control that emotional reaction after it runs for a little bit of time, the chemical reaction that's created produces a mood. So you say to a person, "What's wrong with you?" And they say, "Oh, I'm in a mood." "Well, why are you in a mood?" "Well, this thing happened to me 2 or 3 days ago." And if we keep those chemicals going for, say, weeks to months, that's called a temperament. And if we keep those emotions then running for years on end, that's called a personality trait. So our personality traits are made up primarily by the emotions that we memorize. So now, if emotions are the end product of experience, and we can remember experiences better because we can remember how they feel. Remember how you felt during 9/11. You can tell me exactly where you were and who you were with. You remember the birth of your children or your wedding or going on a vacation. You can remember that because the experience changed your internal chemical state. And because you can notice the change in your internal chemical state, you pay attention to what does it. So person then memorizes an emotional state that becomes part of their personality, and that emotion becomes so stable within their being, they become so familiar with it, that now they say, "I am unhappy, I am unworthy, I am insecure." And if emotions are the end product of past experiences, and the person's living by the same emotion every day, they're literally thinking in the past. So there's a gap between the way the person appears, how they present themselves to the world, and then there's how they really feel. And that gap between how they appear and how they really feel is determined by the amount of emotions that they memorize. So now they can think positively all they want. They could have the biggest dream board, but if it doesn't have an emotional quotient in which they begin to feel the joy and the passion of that event, and they're still living the rest of their day in fear or anxiety or unworthiness or insecurity, their mind is connected to the past, and so they'll always keep creating more of the past. So the personal change that has to take place is the person has to begin to realize what emotion, remember, emotion is energy in motion, what emotion am I embracing every day? Because if emotion is energy in motion, then that, and the person experiences the same emotion every single day, they're freezing energy in their life to be exactly the same. There is no available energy to create with. So then they have to begin to unmemorize that emotion and begin to transmute that fear or that insecurity or that guilt into another emotion. And that process of unmemorizing that emotion literally liberates the energy out of their body, and it becomes free energy now to create with. And so as they begin to remove the masks of those emotions that they've memorized that become part of their personality, as energy begins to liberate, how they appear and who they are becomes more merged, and they develop this state of transparency. the final result of that is, they start to overcome their anger and their fear and their guilt and their pain and their sadness. They start to get happy. Now, the moment they start to feel joy, that natural state of being that most human beings are privileged to, as they begin to find joy within themselves, independent of the conditions in their life, or what we would call unconditional love, then that's when the experience finds them. That's when the event happens. So most people say, oh, well, I'll have, when I have these possessions, or I'm going to accumulate these possessions to make me happy. What that really means is they're living by Newtonian laws. They're living by very classical laws of physics. In other words, they'll go out and they'll do whatever it takes to get the things they want in their life, you know, or the experiences that they want. And they think that once they have those things or those experiences, that will bring them a certain amount of joy. That's the backwards thinking in the quantum law. The quantum law actually works the other way. Transmute the emotion into something else, and once we're able to do that then, and change the mind and the body ahead of the experience, to make a new mind and recondition the body to a new emotion ahead of the experience, that's when the person finds joy for no reason, and that's when the events start to find them, and they start to experience a greater sense of self. So if I were to say it really simply, your personal reality is created from your personality. So the present reality that you're experiencing is created from your present personality. To change your personal reality, then, you would have to change something about your personality. And your personality, then, is made up of how you think, how you act, and how you feel. Now, most people don't want to do that. They'd rather turn on the TV or get on their cell phones and complain or get on the Internet and distract them from those emotions that are the core of their memorized self. And so I think that one of the things that happens when people begin to realize that there's got to be an energy exchange that takes place. In other words, if you want something to happen in your life, there's some emotion that you memorize. That emotion is energy, and it's a footprint of the past. So once you begin to unmemorize that emotion and you liberate it, that emotion now is free energy. And that's when you start to look into the future instead of looking to the past.
Amazing. Thank you so much for that in-depth answer. Do people have to attend the workshop to get this information about the meditation technique that you'll be teaching, or is it available through other sources on your website?
Well, most people who read my first book called Evolve Your Brain, The Science of Changing Your Mind, when they got through it, they found out that there was a lot of good scientific information in there that helped them understand how change is possible. But then they said, well, how do I do it? And so we're working on a second book here that's called Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself, How to Lose Your Mind and Create a New One. And it's all about the practical application. So, you know, they can get on my website and they can get on the mailing list for when the second book comes out. And the second book is pretty much the how-to, a simple, easy version to be able to understand how we become who we are and what it takes to become somebody else. There's some, you know, DVDs and some CDs that are available that talk about the art of change and how we can change. And we just started a new service that is like a teleconference once a month where I develop a concept for about 20 minutes or so, and then people call in and we work as a group in coming to some greater understanding. So I think primarily as soon as the book is out, I think people will have a kind of a map to the process. But I think that most people who do the workshops find it pretty valuable.
Wonderful. Well, I know that the workshop sounds incredible, but not everyone is always going to be able to get to those. I mean, you have one in the Bahamas. It looks like you're all over the world here. Are they all the same workshop? Because I noticed there's one you're speaking at, the Chiropractic Awareness Council. So what are you going to be teaching there? You'll be teaching other chiropractors, right?
I think so, Marie. I mean, I do a series of different lectures, and it depends on the group. You know, I was in Toronto in October last year and did the keynote presentation for the Energy Psychology Conference. So it just depends on the subject matter. I mean, my favorite thing to teach, of course, is the workshops, because I have a whole day or 2 days or even sometimes 3 days, depending on the length, to give people the tools. I mean, the other presentations I do, can we do the origins of disease, how disease manifests and in the body, you know, in adults, and we do a thing on spontaneous remissions and my research into spontaneous remissions. We do some corporate things. I just did a corporate thing in Denver just last week. And then we do address healthcare practitioners, from chiropractors to academics and psychologists, psychiatrists, and everything in between, about the neuroscience of healing and the neuroscience of change, and some what are some of the latest technology is giving us as tools to understand how the mind works. So, and we do a little sports stuff too. So it just depends on the group.
Okay, great. Well, check out drjoedispenza.com for more information and to see if he's coming to a location near you coming up soon.
Ever had a hankering to ski the world-famous slopes of Whistler? Boy, do we have great news for you. Escape the city in one of Zipcar's many mountain-ready vehicles. Plus, get $30 back in free driving credit when you tweet a selfie on the slopes at Zipcar Vancouver. Zipcar. Wheels when you want them.
I faced it. I have Alzheimer's disease.
My diagnosis has let me get on with my life my way.
The more we learned about my grandfather's dementia, the more we could face the future and make plans.
My husband Tom and I spoke to our doctor right away.
I have Alzheimer's, but it doesn't have me.
I faced it.
So can you.
For more information about early diagnosis, visit alzheimer.ca.
You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM. We're also online at citr.ca. The following program is a repeated broadcast.
You had an incredibly horrible spinal injury. They were going to put like a metal rod in your back, and you were able to heal that. Now, I listened to an interview that you did about where you were talking about how you were able to heal your spine, and part of it was visualization of how your spine should look. Did you incorporate emotions into that as well? Can you tell us a little bit about how you, what your experience was with that?
Sure. I mean, it was a moment of awakening in my life. I mean, I was in a triathlon and was in the biking portion of a race, and the police officer that was waving me on to make the turn had his back to the oncoming traffic, and so when I made the turn, I just got pretty much blindsided by a four-wheel drive Bronco going 55 miles an hour, and wound up having multiple fractures in my spine with some bone fragments on the cord there, and was facing a pretty rough diagnosis. But it wasn't, I had to make a decision at some point, and it wasn't just that I just thought, oh, well, I'm just going to visualize my spine better, you know, or healthy or perfect. I just had to ask some bigger questions, and I think when we have crisis in our life, when we have difficulties in our life, if we're prudent and we're conscious, I think the first thing we ask is, why did this happen, and is it, how can I change this, or I can't go on business as usual, so I got to become somebody else. Or you begin to ask questions, is there more to life? That begin to shatter your old beliefs, because pretty much we go on living our lives in a certain level of comfort until something disrupts that. And crisis is one of the ways that I think that gets people's attention from a cosmic point of view. And so it was just an opportunity for me in my 20s where I had to actually begin to ask some bigger questions, and so the prognosis was really poor at the time. They didn't think I'd be able to walk again, and I just said, I asked myself, what do I know? What do I absolutely know? And the first thought that I had was that the power that made the body heals the body. I just believe in this innate intelligence within every human being that pretty much is the giver of life, that if there's an intelligence independent of a culture or a gender or a race or creed that is indigenous to every human being, that keeps our heart beating and digests our food and filters our blood and makes 10 million cells every second and organizes little enzymes through our DNA and keeps things from mutating. And so there's this intelligence, this mind that's so much bigger than us, and that few people ever take the moment to acknowledge it or give thanks to it or develop a relationship with it. So I went from, you know, being a 24-year-old kid, you know, living in Southern California and having a great life and being really busy and successful to all of a sudden laying face down and not being able to do much. And so I thought, well, listen, I'm not going to let any thought go by that I don't want to experience. That's the first thing I'm going to do. And the second thing I'm going to do is see if I can make contact with this intelligence. If it's real, if it's a consciousness, consciousness is awareness, and awareness is noticing, it should be noticing me. So let me just give it a sign. Let me give it some orders. Let me give it a template. Let me give it a plan, a very specific plan of what I want. And then I got to get out of the way, and I got to give it to it, and I got to trust that it's going to do the healing for me. And this process, of course, was over the course of a little bit of time, but I decided, look, you know, I have nothing else to do. I'm nowhere to go now. I can't do anything, and I'm just going to see if I can begin to organize my mind here. And so as I began to begin the process, I became so aware how unfocused my mind really was, because I was feeling pain, and I was scared, and I had a lot of emotions, and, you know, my life had changed dramatically in that moment. So it took me a little bit of time to be able to get to the point where I could actually forget about all that stuff and begin to make a very specific picture of what I wanted. And I was basically reconstructing my vertebrae in my mind, one vertebrae at a time. And if I lost my concentration or my focus, I would stop and start all over again, because I didn't want to give anything but a pure signal to this intelligence. So the more I did it, the easier it got. And so after weeks of doing this, I started to notice that when I could get through it, the whole process, without any distractions, it was like hitting a tennis ball in a sweet spot. There was a very significant feeling that I became aware of and familiar with. And that feeling was just a really great sense of connectedness. Just like if you hit a tennis ball in a sweet spot, or you hit a golf ball the right way, or, you know, you do a round off to a back handspring and you land it right, or you do a dive, or whatever it is that we know from sports, that we swish a basketball, it just feels right, or score a goal in hockey, you know, and you know it's going. There's a feeling that goes along with it. And I just wanted to have that feeling. And so over time, I got easier and easier for me to create this imagery. And then I started thinking about things I wanted to do. And if I was able to walk again, I started to fall in love with going to lunch and watching a sunset and, you know, running again. And I just allowed my mind to just go. And what I didn't know at the time was that if you do that properly, once the thought that you're imaging becomes real, it produces a very, very strong chemical reaction in your body, and the body thinks it's in the experience. And it's that conditioning process, that emotional conditioning process, that begins to send new signals to the body and new signals to the genes and new information to the cells. And over time, I just made my way out of it. I was back in my life, I think, in maybe 10 and a half, 11 weeks, and back to, you know, doing everything I wanted to do at 12 weeks. I mean, and I'm not anybody special. I just couldn't imagine living the rest of my life and with rods in my spine and being, you know, addicted to medications. I just made myself a deal. I just said, if I was ever able to walk again, I'd spend the rest of my life studying this process, and that's where I've been since then.
Amazing. Do you think that you would be teaching and inspiring so many people if you hadn't had that accident?
Probably not. Probably not.
It's amazing.
I would have been too distracted.
It's so true. Let's talk a little bit about how people distract themselves from their emotions and from what's going on in their mind. So you mentioned before how we get on the internet or we turn on the television. So when someone is thinking these negative thoughts and it starts to become their mood and starts to become their personality, and they go, some teachers of the law of attraction say that distracting yourself is an acceptable way to get out of that feeling that you're in.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm kind of thinking maybe when you're on the internet or you're watching a movie, or distracting yourself in whatever way, eating food, whatever it is that you do, are those thought patterns and those emotions still kind of playing behind the scenes?
Mm. That's a fabulous question, Marie, and I'm going to answer it without knowing what the people that teach the law of attraction actually mean by distracting. Sometimes it's good, but I'm going to assume that when people have an emotion that they can't make go away, if they eat or if they go to the movies or if they watch a video or if they get on the internet or they go on vacation or they buy the sports car, they buy the boat or they join the social club and meet new people that have the same problems and they're joining for the same reasons, all of that is to make a feeling go away. In other words, what most people do is they use the environment, they use something outside of them to make the feeling go away, and that's a natural tendency in most human beings. The problem is it's very Newtonian, it's very classical physics. In other words, if I take this pill or I drink this drink or if I shop and I spend this amount of money or if I buy this car or if I watch this video, that thing that's outside of me is going to change my internal chemical state, and it's going to make that feeling go away. And the moment that feeling goes away, I'm going to pay attention to what did it. And so the problem with that is that the next time the receptor sites on the cells have to change, or the chemistry has to change, and they rely on shopping or gambling or video gaming or whatever, the next time they do it, they have to do it a little bit more. They have to shop a little bit more. They have to gamble a bit more. They have to video game a little bit more. They have to do a little bit more to make the feeling go away because the receptor sites on the outside of the cells become desensitized. And we talked about this in the bleep. The cell regulates so that it needs more of a chemical hit to turn on. That sounds like an addiction to me. So it's not a bad thing. It's that just people think that they don't know that the change can actually come from within. And so the being distracted for a time being, I think, allows the person to, you know, unclutter themselves from the emotion, but that's just so that they can get clear on what they want. And that's what intention is, to get clear on what we want. And if we're running a real strong set of chemicals that are derived from those negative emotions that are coming from those survival centers in the brain and body that cause us to get angry or aggressive or hateful or judgmental or jealous or envious or afraid or anxious or insecure, or, you know, suffering or depressed, or those chemicals that are created from those survival emotions give us 90% of those negative behaviors. Now, the problem with those emotional chemicals is they have a very, very strong punch to them, and they give the body a rush of energy. And most people begin to become addicted or connected to that emotion that then formulates who they are. It reinforces them as a somebody. Now, the process of creation has nothing to do with being a somebody, but it has everything to do with being a nobody, which means when you're truly creating and you're truly paying attention to what you're creating, you forget about yourself. You forget about your body. You forget about your environment. You forget about time. And that creative process then, the side effect of that creative process, creates those emotions of joy or falling in love with what you're creating. And that is what we're after in the creative process. So if the person is struggling with an emotion and they can't find joy just in the creative process, they can visualize all they want. But if they can't let go of that emotional state, they're anchored to the past, and the results will be very minimal. So it is really about going from survival to creation. And I always say we live in two states of mind. We either live in survival or we live in creation. And the hardest part about this whole process is actually sitting down and making the time to ask ourselves those questions. What do I want? What do I want to change about myself? If I live by this state of resentment for many hours in a day, I'm poisoning myself. And is this loving to me? And I can't blame my mother. I can't blame my father. I can't blame my past. Because really now it's just up to me to change it. So the person, you could say to them, well, geez, you know, you had this event happened. Well, if that event happened and the person lives by the same emotion since that event for 20 or 30 years, they haven't evolved at all. They're still emotionally at the same place they were when they were 15 or 20 years old. So do we go after the event and ask the person to make sense of the event? No. I mean, the event only will, according to the neuroscientific model and the biological model, recalling the event, nerve cells that fire together wire together, reinforces the circuitry. And if we work ourselves up into emotional froth, we're reconditioning the body to memorize that emotion even further. So forget about the event. Just look at the emotion that you memorized that has become part of your personality and take that emotion now and begin to work with it and change it into something else. And when we're able to then do that properly, then the body begins to respond and the body begins to get healthy and then things start to shift in our life and we have movement and we start celebrating life like we're supposed to.
Beautiful. I want to ask you, Dr. Joe, if there's one person out there struggling, living in depression, living in hopelessness and anger and desperation, if you could just say something to them, what would it be?
Well, I would say to them that those emotions have a very, very significant effect on their bodies, and that the only person they're hurting when they live by those emotions is the actually themselves. And so they can come up with a lot of reasons why they are that way, but the bottom line is that the emotion is still in them, and if they could begin to ask themselves a couple questions in the morning, what would I have to change about myself to be in joy? Who would I have to forgive? What would I have to let go of? And as they began to answer those questions, they would begin the unlearning process. And then I would ask them to begin to give thanks for the things that they find in their life that are precious or important to them, and begin to not have it be an intellectual process, but actually have it be a very physiological process to feel that. That's when we begin to free the body, you know, from our own chains of emotions.
And what about that person who is just saying, you know, I've lived through hell, my born under a bad sign, I've had it bad since the day I was born, it's still bad now, it's always going to be bad. Can they, even that person, change?
Well, first of all, you got to want to change. I mean, you can't make a person change, but listen, beliefs, you know, our beliefs are created by our attitudes. Our attitudes are created by how we think and feel. How we think and feel are created from our memories. So we pretty much define reality based on our memories, because those beliefs then form perceptions. So the person who has to have, here's the deal, that person has to be willing to drop their emotional beliefs long enough to allow new information to enter into their mind and body. They got to begin to allow new thoughts and new knowledge to enter into their brain, because if they don't, you know, for most people that have strong emotional tendencies, no new information can enter into their system that's not equal to the emotion that they're memorized to. So they can't wrap their mind around an alternate possibility, because, listen, if you feel it, then it's real. But so then when a person finally reaches the lowest point, and this is what typically happens, that's when they finally realize they got to let go of something, because they've reached their lowest point to realize that they're alone. No one has any answers for them, and it's up to them to begin to change. And unfortunately, the human mechanism is that we reach that low. And so if a person then is able to learn information and they begin to wire it in their brain, you know, every time we learn something, we make a new synaptic connection. So as they begin to learn new information and as they begin to think about being somebody else, there's a good possibility that they can climb out of the hole if they're willing to take time for themselves to begin the process of change.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. We just have a few minutes left in the show. It sounds like this accident that you had and that awakening was kind of the catalyst for the work that you're doing now. But I'm wondering, is there anyone that you look up to as a mentor or an influence in your spiritual life?
Well, I think that there's so much great information that's available right now for people. And for me, you know, I find value in the simplest books to the most complex scientific journals. And any time I learn something new about human potential, or I learn something new about our possibilities and how we can overcome ourselves. I mean, I respect so many great scientists and so many great spiritual teachers and leaders that I think that so many people are really, really onto this process. And I also think that when we get beyond conventional beliefs, you know, and convention kind of defines the current belief systems, and most people, they, you know, when you go against convention, you're always considered foolhardy or insane until you actually are able to change convention, and then you're considered, you know, a genius or a saint or somebody great. And I think this is the time right now where people around the world are awakening, and you know, I certainly hope that on some level that all of us can contribute in some way that allows this place that we live to begin to flourish and change for the better. And I think so much information is available right now for so many people. And because we're in an information age, I think that there's so much accessible knowledge and possibility. So I think there's just too many to name.
Wonderful. Good answer. What would you say is the one thing, I mean, I'm sure people will take away a lot, but what's the one major thing that people are going to take away from that workshop?
Oh, they'll absolutely know without a doubt that they'll understand the process of change, and they'll have all the tools to do it. And when they walk out of there, they'll have enough practical experience to begin to apply it to their life. And that's the most important message, I think. You'll understand the science behind it, you'll understand the philosophy, but the most important thing is that you'll absolutely know without a doubt if you change your mind, there'll be evidence in your life as a result of it. And that's when a person begins to become empowered.
Wonderful. And if people want to get on the mailing list to hear more about that, they can go to your website, drjoedispenza.com. Well, we just have a few minutes left in the show, so Dr. Joe, I'm wondering if there's anything that you would like to leave the listeners with.
Well, I think I have great hope in the human being, and I think that giving people permission to change, I mean, that's what the movie What the Bleep was about. It was to give people some new knowledge and begin to have them question the nature of reality, but most importantly, that there is a power within every human being that is both personal and at the same time universal that we all have access to. And when we begin to develop a relationship with this power and we begin to surrender our problems to it and we begin to use it to create with and we begin to let go of old scars and bruises and emotional branding, that something quite beautiful begins to flourish, and I have great hope and belief that is the future of humanity. So for me, it's just a privilege and an honor to be able to contribute in any way that I can. And there's nothing more, I don't think, I was saying this when I was in Boston this weekend, you know, you can go to different races and different cultures, and you can talk to different races and different cultures and interact around the world. And, you know, human transformation, independent of whether you're Japanese or Jewish or Mexican or from Australia or London, transformation looks exactly the same on any human face. And there's an amazing quality that there's a, you know, there's a liberation of energy and there's a sense of freedom and such a glow in people's eyes and a freedom that to me, I think, is unforgettable. So that's an inspiration when I see that, to keep doing what I do.
Wonderful. Well, I know that you have been inspiring millions of people around the world through, you know, your appearance in the movie as well as with your book and all of the speaking engagements that you do and your website, drjoedispenza.com. Be sure to check that out. And I really just want to thank you so much for being on the show today. You have been just such an inspiration.
Oh, thank you. It was fun speaking with you.
Thank you so much. Well, have a wonderful day, Dr. Joe.
Okay. I hope to cross paths with you soon.
Up next is Parts Unknown with DJ Chris Arific on CITR.
Unearthing the depths of contemporary cassettes and vinyl undergrounds, ranging from DIY bedroom pop and garage rock all the way to harsh noise and, of course, drone. Pop Drone, every Wednesday at 10 to 11:30 a.m. at CITR 101.9 FM.
My advice to young girls would be, go home after school.
The most beautiful thing about my burrow is the stillness.
I must have silence for all my passages.
And it must have
this
been
noise,
very,
however, is a draw of
silence to breath,
and is
here only as a faint whistle.
I did not hear it
day
at all,
and night
as
I was on burrowing, although it must be set fresh and female.
In my
it is so much speed,
audible only to the ear of the householder,
seemed to me that the beast has ever even heard me.
It simply cannot have heard me for all that time.